This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks, guys. So let's get off with the right stuff, I hope. Everyone here gathers to talk about the past, nostalgic, what happened in the greatest golden days of pinball when I was joining this industry in the late 70s, early 80s. And unfortunately, some of us became too obsessed with the past. We forget the present and the future. Pinball is ready for some big changes. Let me start by reminding all of you something you all know. In the 1940s, well, longer than that, Americans mechanized the Bagatelle, right? I don't know if any of you saw my speech in Seattle, where I talked about mechanizing the agricultural machinery and basically everything on Earth, all the way to the dildo with the vibrator and the batteries. We are a crazy lot from all over the world. So we mechanized Bagatelle. And a genius called Harry Williams, that we all know, took the World War II technology, which was the electrocoil and a lot of electromechanical mechanisms, and put them in this mechanized Bagatelle called pinball. From the little ivory ball used in Bagatelle, he moved it to a ball bearing, which is called today the pinball, as we know it, the silver ball, because of the ball bearing's physical composition. Now, this ball is a wrecking ball. You all know that. We all fight it every day. The only reason he used steel balls, and all that stuff was off our military equipment, off our aircraft. I'm talking about the coils. As a matter of fact, Williams was doing torpedo tests on the Chicago River for the Pentagon. I don't know if you guys know that. And during the war effort, Harry Williams was very active with his knowledge of magnetic, electromagnetic mechanisms for our winning the war in the Pacific. He developed the first magnetic triggered torpedo that would explode just passing a metal hull of a ship. Now, that said, since Harry Williams, no one improved pinball. We all lived off his great, great mechanisms, which as we shuffle them around and we keep them, you guys keep them going, God bless you. And we fix play fields every 2 weeks. The reason pinball collapsed in the commercial market, guys, is because the wrecking ball and the technologies from the 40s. We do not have today the people with the work ethics that we used to in the 50s. You call today a tech, right? He's worse than Python. He charges you $70 just to get out of bed. And then he shows up, or he doesn't, or he shows up 2 days later. And most of them cannot fix our pinball machines, right? They can plug in your computer and do some of this, but they can't take the screwdriver and the pliers and get the pinball game working. So that's one of the major problems, maintenance, right? What I hear, here are Band-Aids. Everybody is coming up with little Band-Aids for our wooden leg. We got a wooden leg on our hands. So let's move to 2014. Shh, boom. Fast forward. Let's look at where we find our new pinball mechanisms. How could we improve pinball? Can anybody here guess where I'm going with this? What did Harry Williams do? He looked at the best technology our military had. Eugene Jarvis did that too, and Steve Ritchie at Atari and these guys. When the little board was declassified, also military technology, right? The 36K little boards that were used in Joust and the first pinball games. Only 36K of memory. My little toe has more software and hardware than that. So, where am I going with this? You still get it? I don't. Composites, number one, composites. There is no reason to have the wrecking ball. I'm looking at redesigning a pinball right now with a few courageous young engineers. And let me tell you another quick story. Do you guys know why Moses took his people for 40 years through the desert after escaping from Egypt? So he could wait for all the old ones to die and all their slave habits. We are slaves to the old bad habits. And we are in denial that this thing is past its time. So, what do we do? We gotta redesign and get technologies off shelf. Everything I'm getting is off the shelf. A good example is I have here a trough Mac. Could you get it for me? It's in the under the banana. No, that's not a banana flipper. It's a real banana. Yeah, that's the case in point we have here. Something I did with George 2 months ago. We finished this. It's a patented, what I call a revolver wheel for your ball trough. One little motor, gravity feeds the balls into the barrel, into the revolver, and it turns and gravity puts them in the shooter lane. It holds 6 balls, but if you have another 4 or 5 balls here, if you're crazy enough to have an 11-ball multi-ball, this can handle it. One little motor, again, Dalaran parts, and I will have it in Pinball Magazine. Please get the next issue of Pinball Magazine. All these mechanisms will be published by Jonathan, and you guys will look at the drawings. And there is Jonathan. Good morning. So besides the ball trough, which is a pain in the butt to get out, I don't have to preach to the choir, right? Next will be the flipper, which is this huge burdensome mech with a coil that runs hot. Again, I don't have to tell you guys what the monster is. And now, there are some folks that are just awesome, like P3, the guys that are doing the flippers with the wires, the pneumatic stuff. There are some kids, but we need more kids. I would like all of you to encourage your children, your children's friends, college students, anyone to join pinball and to come up with ideas. When I came into this industry, most of us, Steve Ritchie, Eugene, myself, were young kids, crazy kids that came into the industry. And you guys should have been there. I mean, Steve Kordak threw me not out of the room, out of the building several times because of me wanting to put the plastic undulating ramps in Cyclone or doing the vortex in Pivot. Same thing will happen today. We need these guys from colleges that are, first of all, we will tell them, no, you can't do that. And they don't know it. And they will do it. They'll push pinball forwards like we did in the 80s. Because we are too young and stupid and courageous to know otherwise. And it does take courage. And it also takes a mind that's not jaded by experience and preconceived notions. That's the disadvantage of being too experienced into a field. you get into a paradigm and you refuse to leave it, to move forward. We all know that. It happened with the digital watch, right? In the 80s? When this guy went, Swiss engineer, went to his bosses and said, I have a new cool watch. And the guy looked at the digital watch and said, that's a piece of new technological crap. They fired him. He came to the United States, to Texas Instruments, and he went to Japan, to Seiko, and the rest is history. Switzerland lost in 2 years 80% of the wristwatch market. You guys remember all the cute little watches, the digital, even our alarm clocks, everything. Pinball needs, besides the flipper, new jet bumpers, new posts. They don't stay stiff. They will bend. We are working on several technologies, spring-loaded, posts that move and absorb shock. We're working on a multi-composite, multi-material pinball, which will have LEDs light up and change colors. And the LEDs inside it will be charged by a motion energy generator, a little flywheel inside. You know where I'm going with that already. So these young kids from DeVry, and I invited many of them yesterday and today. Mr. Fix couldn't fix it for me. So next year, I promise you, they'll all be here in force. Teachers. Dr. Fix, yeah. Well, it wasn't. It was above his. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people here that, you know, one thing that I want you all to understand is that the future and its kids are our ambassadors. In the future, when we're all gone. After my cancer and the treatment, my entire attitude changed towards life, towards pinball, towards you guys. We have no time to complain, to waste, and to wallow into the past. We got to move on. These kids love pinball. I went to Seattle, and you couldn't believe, in an audience like this, maybe how people under 30 are here. Can you raise your hands? Under 30. Craig, you old man, you. All right. They didn't get up. They were partying last night like I used to. Okay. So let's cut through that. Fast forward to in Seattle. There was only one guy over 30 at one of my seminars. It was awesome. There are a lot of high school and college kids. And also when I go on campuses or I know if you guys followed online Jeffrey Carter and all this, I didn't know that I was a social American phenomenon and I influenced people in bars and everywhere here in Europe. That was a surprise to me. I thought I only aggravated my parents and my neighbors. I didn't know I was that influential. But anyway, these kids love pinball. The thing that they don't like about pinball is like sitting in front of a laptop that's off and you cannot play video games, they told me. Pinballs are always broken. You go to a location, and even if it's not broken, it's working. You play with your bodies in 2-3 hours, that game is down. You guys all saw it. Even with our new manufacturers and new games, they come to the show and they can stay on for 8 freaking hours. They can't. And it's not their fault they did their best. It is the fact that time and technology passed us by. So, back to the future. The ball, nobody says that ball has to be rigid. It can have an elastic surface, so it gives. It can change colors. What is the biggest enemy of pinball? Switches, right? If one switch doesn't work, or one of the switches in the lanes catches a ball, you have a ball hang up, right? And again, well, anyway, you gotta go get the switch out, play with pliers, get the leaf or the wire lined up. What a pain, right? You guys don't know it. You have to take half the game apart sometimes to get to a little switch, you know? It's just like undressing a woman in Alaska for one kiss. It's terrible. So anyway, so boy, do you know how painful it is? I could tell by that laugh, because that's a good analogy. All of my analogies, you guys know, are colorful and vulgar to keep things interesting and related to real life. So a lot of you that laughed went to Alaska and did that, huh? Well, it's about pinball. It's about pinball. Okay, so fast forward, when I worked at Baytech from 2003 to 2007, if you guys look online, I designed my second redemption, Blockbuster Chameleon Paradise with Z, like Jokers. I use a lot of Z's, so I cover A to Z everything. So Chameleon Paradise is very successful. Kids love it. I don't know if you guys know about the game, which was, it's a plastic chameleon that has a tongue that hits these bugs. And as usually, I have a poem that explains the game rules. You hit the lizard on the butt, make his sticky tongue shoot out. So he eats them pesky crickets, and he poops for you the tickets. They come out with little farts. Kids love it. It's the most successful redemption game. I almost got fired because of it, because they thought I was crazy. I said, kids love pull my finger jokes, and they did a pull my finger game because of me. It didn't go anywhere because they were not pulling the finger, right? But anyway, at Baytech, I went and visited a potato chip factory in La Porte, Indiana. Not because of Baytech, but because of my then future ex-girlfriend who loved potato chips, and she was a country girl. We didn't go to the Art Museum of the Ballet. We went to the potato chip factory. You talk about redneck weekend. So, but that's the beauty of American ingenuity. I saw millions of potato chips shooting by like NASCARs. Incredible speed. Millions of them. And this little air gun would go poof, poof, and spit out all the burnt potato chips. It was like God was poof, poof. And I went to the supervisor. I said, how do you guys do that? How does that air gun know which potato chips are twisted or burnt? He goes, a little camera. Like I was an idiot. You know, you should know that. I go, you're kidding me. I said, could you take me and show me? So he takes this little redneck engineer, typical American ingenuity, a guy from the farm who came up with this, because they had to do it by hand with 200 Mexicans, right? Shaking in their boots, they're all illegals. So they replaced them with a camera and a air gun, right? And now they're sorting potato chips perfect. So I said, I saw how it worked. I said, holy cripes. In pinball, we have all the switches. I can have the little camera look at my balls and get rid of all them switches and know where all my ball hang-ups are, right? It makes sense. I got John Kotlarik, you guys remember him from Williams? He did a Gorgar speech with Eugene Jarvis. He helped me design and program Bubbles, one of my video games. Genius musician and software guy, crazy immigrant Czechoslovakian guy. So I brought him from Abbott Labs. He was working at Abbott. And he was using camera technology that I'm talking about. A camera that tells a robot what to do, not an air gun, but a medical robot, right? With software. And he perfected what I called the cyber eye. It's patented, it's developed. Any of you that are doing new pinball games, I beg of you, call Baytech, take note. Larry Trinkler, he's a very nice guy, reasonable guy. Don't mess around with switches and a ton of software. You get it off the shelf. It's CyberEye camera. You put it above your pinball playfield. You will not need a switch installed or ever adjusted. Also, that camera can be hooked up to an online connection. If something doesn't go right with a game, that camera is going to tell you what happened. It's like a black box on an airplane. Also, the camera can be used for other game design applications, which I will reveal in Pinball Magazine next issue. Jonathan will have all the details, just like he will have the Boltrov Max, the Flipper, the new ball. Also, James of Pinball Inc., that has the best ramps in the world, he will carry these mechanisms, because we are designing them with the intent of replacing all these very expensive helicopter transmissions you guys buy and have to put in the games every week. Which is, you know, I mean, if you talk about the new Target, I don't have to tell you, right? 5-drop Target mix, right? It's like putting a freaking new engine in a Rolls Royce, man. It's, you need chains and pulleys and strong guys. And anyway, it won't be there. All those targets are gone. We'll have targets that will change during the game, are going to be pennies, our modern technology, are going to be much more exciting than these tongue depressors that we have. The plastic tongue depressors, I call them. Where do I go next? Oh, the freaking coffin, the Halloween coffin. We put our games in that cabinet. The cabinet was necessary because there are big wheels underneath, right? Remember, like the old slot machines, the electromechanical with cams? Back box is the same thing. Today we got boards the thickness of a magazine, right? And I'm going to have these mechs that have very small footprints. We don't need these huge coffins. We have to change also then the box this stuff comes in. If you guys remember, my analogy would be, remember the old TV sets with the big screen with the yoke and all the big lamps. And now look at it. That's a beautiful laptop, right? You got this thin screen TVs. Same thing with our pinball gate. That'll be easy to move. We'll remove weight. That'll be easier to transport. That'll be easier to manufacture. And they will look like 2000 new millennium pinball games. They won't look like First World War pinball games with new licenses. Okay? It looks terrible. It's almost, what would the analogy be? They have all these licenses from Hollywood from this year. On a 50-year-old, technology is like tits on a ball. It doesn't make sense. You put new subject matter, sci-fi, modern subject matters and stories, and that's another thing. Let's get from mechanisms to another pet peeve of mine, which is the storylines and the games. You guys all are familiar with Mata Hari and a great, great Christensen and Bally and Williams all games, and Gottlieb, God rest him in peace. Alvin just passed away. He went to pinball heaven. And I heard they have Gorgar there. What a great game. But Gorgar is a good example. Baccaroo. Look at the greatest pinball games. They're not bedtime stories. They didn't have Happy Meal toys on them. They didn't. They had a cowboy being kicked in the ass by a horse. They had, you name it, sexy girls on the beach, a golf course, American, I call it, American hunters, duck hunters, right? Things Americans, everyday Americans do and have fun with. That's why I put the backyard barbecue in Bad Cats, and I use my neighbors for inspiration and every day. And whenever I did something epic like Big Guns, I made fun of war or whatever. So we have to get our humor, American sense of humor, back into the subject matter. And we got to stop using, you know, this. You know what I'm saying. So we have to move on. And I think that if we do all those things and we invite the new generation to our party, they're going to come to our call. You guys will not believe how much these kids love pinball because they discovered it. See, the guys in their 30s, 40s, it's a novelty. Oh, in my childhood, or, you know, it makes you even feel old if you like pinball. The new kids, they never saw it. It's totally new to them. It's just like people that never saw Moby Dick. And they went and saw Jaws, and they went, oh, what a genius is this Spielberg guy. However, the great white shark was the great white whale, right? We all knew the story, the guys that read and know. And we went, what a copycat, you know? But to somebody that didn't know about Moby Dick, Jaws was awesome. Although Jaws was not as good as the original Moby Dick movie, if you guys saw it, it's incredible. With Captain Ahab, and awesome. Thanks. Is my voice that bad? No. Okay. Leave it here. Maybe I spill it and I make things exciting. I like. What time is it? 10:30. Should I covered everything in a half an hour? No. No, I got a lot more to talk about, but let's take a break till 11. Party break in, because I got a lot of stuff to set up and show you guys. And like I said, I was supposed to start at 11. So I kind of scrambled down here. And I'm flying by the seat of my pants right now. Yeah, and that's when things get good. So can we get back in like 25 minutes or 30 minutes? 11 o'clock. Is that okay? All right, I'll be right up. Let me set up this next thing. All right. How do I do this? Because I talked for half an hour about the new mix, right? Is Pinball News going to have this, my first half hour, so you guys can catch up with it, or should I go briefly over real quick what I talked about? Huh? Yeah, I'll carry on. So I was saying, after changing the Second World War technology, yanking all that old crap out of the games, putting new mechanisms and new technologies. What we need is some really, really timely, and also I would say what I call universal subject matters that will show the world that pinball in Chicago is American. It's not a Hollywood, you know, a made in China license with a Happy Meal toys on the playfields and all that crap. So let's get back to, most of you are familiar with Pinball Circus, right? Pretty soon you guys will get a look at Zingy Bingy in Pinball Magazine and a few, and on my website. And also a game I'm working on called Sharpshooter 2015. Just so you guys know, one of the greatest games that I always, besides Baccaroo, was Sharpshooter, Roger Sharp's first game, right? The reason I'm doing it is because of a new technology that I'm also gonna use in Zingy Bingy and Circus, which will involve a gun, a laser gun, a back box with a screen and the interaction between the gun, the targets on the playfield, and targets on the screen, which is a totally interactive new patent I'm working on. There is no reason to have a screen in the back glass while playing a pinball game unless the ball locks and then you interact with it. You're looking at the ball and you're playing a pinball game. You're not going to look at the back glass and the movie playing there, right? So that's one of the things I'm working on. Getting back to the most important thing that also was forgotten in pinball. When I joined Williams, it was a dog and pony show, they called it. It was usually a programmer that put everything together. A genius like Larry DeMar or Eugene Jarvis, and a guy with a screwdriver, and a good tech like Dick Vlasic or like Barry Osler, who could build a pinball game in about a half an hour and tear it apart in 5 minutes. And it would be perfect. Not only that, but you had guys like Dave Christensen, Tony Romoni, geniuses. See, I start with a story, and I design a pinball game or any game around a story, a plot, a full concept. So in pinball, my artwork is part of the mechs. The mechs are part of the robot. Imagine Dave Christensen walking in on a Monday morning, and this guy's putting a playfield in front of him. And this man would take a game like Captain Fantastic or Mata Hari and start drawing around already predetermined lights that made no rhyme or reason with any subject matter. They're just put there to light targets or switches. So you knew you made a switch or you hit a target, right? When I did Comet, my first pinball game adventure, I drove them crazy because I said, I want to have a shooting gallery, a motorcycle jump, and the whole thing has to look like an amusement park. I'm going to rearrange the lights. You're only the artist. You can't do that. I said, yes, I can. Watch me. Boom. It was done. I put the fireworks in the back glass, and I, coming from a theatrical and a movie business, to me, a pinball game was nothing but a miniature circus, a miniature theater play, where the ball and you were the main characters. Everything else was supporting characters. And I choreographed it, and I looked at it as a miniature amusement park with a story, a theme park, an amusement park, but a themed amusement park. Not throwing stuff all over for no rhyme or reason. And that is the tragedy of some great pinball games. There are great shooting. Oh, it's smooth. Yeah, but why are you there? What are you doing? All a pinball game is an escape. It's cheap entertainment. It's escape. And that's why I love good pinball games. They take the drug money away from the kids to give them a good trip, man. It's better than a joint, a good pinball game. So getting back to the stories, and that's my beef with the licenses. How can you take Batman after a movie with all the special effects and all the comic books and even compete with it and make an interesting pinball game? There's no freaking way. I looked at what they gave me, and I refused it. And Mark Ritchie and I did Police Force. That was supposed to be Batman, by the way, guys. And I did two licenses, you know, Popeye and Bugs Bunny. But I did them because I had total creative freedom on doing my own story in my movie script and so on. And also learning from the greats from the past. You look at Buckaroo. There is a horse corral story there, right? You feel like you're out west, right on a ranch. You are in a fantasy situation. Any one of the great games, Sharpshooter, great game. You are on the street in a gunfight, right? What a genius Roger Sharp is. So the subject matters, the stories, are very important, but you cannot, with a great theme, without a team, a pinball game is a wet dream. That's my favorite poem. Why is it that way? If you guys remember Charlie Chaplin's movies, he would set up the camera, and they had a camera monkey, right? The guy that cranked it. And he would go in front and do his cartoon character, and it would be a one-man show. Movies evolved where today you have the London Symphonic Orchestra for Star Wars, right? What a great movie. You have a whole cast of actors, writers, costume designers, set designers, computer animators. You have a few hundred people to do a great movie. The same thing in pinball. You don't have those six guys. I call them the dream team. You're never going to go anywhere. Only one guy can make you look like a monkey. You can be the best designer in the world. I'll compare it to a football team, guys. Imagine Joe Montana without, what was his name, Lynn Swann, the great receiver, right? If you don't have good receivers, you look like you throw the ball all over the playfield, right? And you are a great quarterback, but you need a way. You also need the nose block and the blockers. You wind up in an ambulance after one quarter going to the emergency room with broken ribs and a broken neck. So the team to execute these games, the three games I'm talking about, the one would be called Python's Flipper Circus, and it will not be the Pinball Circus as you've seen it. It's going to be Pinball Circus with new mechs and incredible waves in different languages and with different costumes and so on. It will be a morphing experience. I don't need to, but what it would be Cirque du Soleil of pinball, really. That's what I'm looking to bring to you guys. Second game will be Zingy Bingy, which, by the way, you'll see in Pinball Magazine or on my website soon. It's not going to be a porn or a, it's man and woman, Adam and Eve. And then the third game, which would be Sharpshooter 2015, which already has a gun engineer and some of the, it's a flipper gun. It's a gun made out of pinball parts. And you'll see it on my website and in Pinball Magazine. And it shoots the back glass and targets on the playfield with a laser beam. And I call it a morphuzzi. It morphs things in the back glass or on the playfield. It's almost like playing God, you know, in this little environment. But can Python and a couple of other guys do it? No. The reason I held back on getting this thing started is because I didn't have a complete team. Okay? Now, let me tell you that John Bello, who did all my sculptures, the elephant sculpture in circus, because I do my own Happy Meal toys. I don't do McDonald's stuff. Actually, they are animatronics. They are little robots with the look of an animal, or in some cases here, are going to be my own inventions, creatures. John Bello, who is the genius, who's behind a lot of the stuff you saw in the first Sega games and in the 1980s, in the Williams games. Papa Duke used him a lot. Well, I brought him to the industry. John and I worked in the toy industry for Ray Kemper, and he's a genius toy designer and sculptor. You guys are going to meet him next year. Because of the games I'm doing, it's very important for the robotics and the sculptures, the interactive sculptures. Then I'm going to talk to Chris Graner into joining me on this project. I'm pretty sure he'll be we had a great project. You guys remember the Pinbot music, which puts Space Odyssey to shame. He's a composer and again a genius. You guys know Eugene Jarvis. I'll be involved with him. I hope Steve Savoda is going to join us. And then Jim Kleinschmidt, who is a gun maker, and a guy that basically can build a rocket in your backyard and land in Moscow tomorrow. Model makers in our industry are crucial. They are as crucial as a Joe Jobs as a mechanical designer on your team. Without them, my games would have never happened. They are the unsung heroes of this industry. I told you guys last year when that I feel bad when I'm approached by hundreds of people for autographs. They really belong also to these people. They should be asked for autographs and they should be hailed. The only reason Pinbot's Mask opens, and not just my games, but the games of countless designers at Williams, John Trudeau, Steve Ritchie, they were the front guys, the figureheads, like I was. But without Joe Joe's in the back, without their mix, their games would have been breaking like rapid fire and hyperball or some of my games every 5 minutes because we are not Joe Joseph's. So I'm having a whole team right now, like this George kid who's 22, who are designing for me CAD. They have their own robots and scouting robots, printers, 3D printers, 3D CAD systems. We're doing all this in the garages right now, like we did it in the early 80s. Like the the first Maxfield guys will see in the next few months. So for mechanical engineers and model makers, Jim Kleinschmidt and a whole team of about five or six young cowboys. For hardware, I'm going to get Mark Wilfredo, a real good friend of mine, who did Eugene's hardware. He did a Zia system for Williams. He also is an unsung giant. A lot of your games under the hood have his hardware. And that's why Williams games were so reliable. And Rothrill's games are awesome. And so on. It's because Eugene and because of Mark Wilfredo. I will try to do the art and get also, besides John, a few other artists on the team, because there is a lot of cool stuff that has to be done. And also in the process, what's important with me is that these kids, these new artists are going to learn from me like I learned from Dave Christensen and from Tony Romoni. And believe me, the teacher learns more from the students sometimes than they do from him. If there is a healthy relationship and no egos involved, a part of a successful project is that the guy with the experience leave his ego at home and his prejudices and let the new kids on the block shine and know how to get from them the honey drops, I call them. So with that said, I'm going to complete my team, I would say, within the next 2 months. And then I will announce, once the team is complete, the startup of this Pimo project. One thing I refused to do, which I could have, and I had people with cash and envelopes and checks in Seattle here only 2 days ago. A guy wanting to give me, you know, thousands of dollars up front for circus. And in Seattle, could have sold 1,000 units of circus for what it is. And it's much better than what's in Vegas. That's a stripped down version. It's a drain monster. They took a lot of the stuff off it. I'm not going to do that. I think that it's very dishonest. I would be dishonest with myself, because a good game has to first be built, a whitewood tested. You have to have a team to implement it. And then after you have 12 games that are tested in 12 locations for 12 weeks, that's when you know you got a real pinball game. Everything else, trust me, guys, is lies and BS. You never, Williams, when pinball was successful, and operators who call me, or Didier Salmon who call me from France, or Hans Rosenzweig from Hamburg, and say, Python, how many of your games do we buy? Bugs Bunny. I say, buy two. When they call me about Jokers or Taxi, I said, buy two containers. Okay, 70 games a container. Or buy 20 containers, right? Why? It's because they trusted us. My test reports were accurate. Nobody went on the weekend and snuck and put coins into the coin box, salting it, and then lying to the operators. A game, instead of, it was making 40, 60 bucks a week in the 90s, even the best games. They were not making $250 to $400 anymore. The only game in the 90s that made more than $300 a week was Circus at a movie theater. The one that's in Vegas was out in Barrington. And I was there when it was tested. I was already at Capcom. But I knew it was one of two, and they wouldn't test it in 12 locations and 12 weeks because they had no intentions to do such a thing. They were making way too much money turning out crap by formula. Two flippers, three jets, two choo-choo rides, and a Happy Meal toys from McDonald's or Burger King. So, the future again. Once I get the team, I will announce also when the 12 games are on test, so you guys can go and see them. We'll tweak them, and that's when we'll take money, orders, and we will know what we have. Okay? And I want to leave this world with three great pinball games. And I will be the first one to tell you, everybody will make money on my team. They'll all get royalties, except one guy, Python Angel. And I hope you guys will take it from there. We'll use that as a model for the future, meaning using mechs that are good for pinball, using young people to inspire them and employing them and listening to them. And also getting them involved from high school and college the way we used to in the 70s and 80s, all the way down the line to the R&D of your business or of your pinball establishments. Another thing I want to tell you guys, all the new parts, if you want, this will be on Pinball News. It will be in Jonathan's magazine. This mech will be available at James's Atlanta Pinball Inc. that has the ramps that I endorse that are now made out of cellophane. And we tested with rifles. We shot. That's how I test my equipment, with heavy caliber weapons. And his ramp didn't shatter. He has pictures. We should do a I was asked for us to do a video. And maybe we get together and do it again, because that's a blast. Maybe we shoot pinballs out of a shotgun that's specially rigged by my genius, Jim Kleinschmidt, gun maker. Guns, he's a gunsmith. Anyway, so I covered the three future projects, the future mechs, and the team. Any questions? I will show the sit-down pinball in a little bit. First, I'm taking questions on the stuff I just mumbled on. Yes? Real loud. Yell at me.
Can we talk about that camera you were talking about to replace all the switches?
Yeah, it's CyberEye. You can search it in the patent office. It's Baytech in Pulaski, Wisconsin. Write it down. Contact Larry Trinkler.
There would just be one camera.
One camera. And a software program that relates to ping pong balls they use in what is that called? Bar bowling with cops. You throw pinballs at paper cops. Huh? Beer ball. It's used in a NASCAR game I did with little cars. And a camera, there's a screen TV that also shows you the cars and knows where the little cars are on the playfield. And check out the Baytech website. The name of this wonderful guy is Larry Trinkler, and I know Larry is going to license it to people for one reason. We did it to improve people. And the way I found Larry, or he found me, he used a mechanism that shot coins called Crazy Eights. The game was called Crazy Eights. And he found out that I owned a patent on a money gun that shot coins. See, I got mugged once at gunpoint on a train platform in Chicago when I was going to IIT. I was a young kid. And I always dreamed of next time a guy pulls a gun on me and tells me to give him my change, is pull out the money gun and fill him with quarters. So we we built, Jim Kleinschmidt and me, and at Capcom, we built a gun that shot coins. I wanted to shoot coins at monkeys' mouths and call it monkey business, do a shooting gallery with quarters. And can you imagine how many quarters it would take? I mean, it would shoot a brrrr like a machine gun. And it had a money clip where you put a roll of quarters. And we were shooting at walls, and these quarters would stick in the drywall. I go, that's my money gun. Let me go on the south side, get mugged now. So he used a flywheel Mac, not my Mac, similar. So Larry called me and he said, I owe you money. Now, he didn't have to do that. I would have never known about it. He only built 20 crazy eights or 30. He called me to Pulaski and he gave me a check for $3,000 for a Mac that I didn't, it was similar, but I had a patent. So then he said, what do you think about this piece of crap game? I go, you guys need, it needs work. So I stayed at the afternoon and I redrew the cabinet, I redesigned the game. And he wanted me to be a consultant. So I'm heading for the door to drive back to Chicago from Green Bay. This is above the cheese belt. This is Pulaski, Michigan. And they got 50 bars and one church. And everybody's got Green Bay Packer underwear and hats. You know, it's like going to Nazi Germany. Everybody's Hail Packers. But that's all they got there, the Packers. And those boys can play football, too. That's all they can do. They ice fish and they play football. And they build great redemption games. And they are salt of the earth people. And I did Comedian Paradise a few. But anyway, I brought poor John Cotlari from Abbott Labs, who likes the ballet and the opera. He's a musician, to Cheeseland. He's cursing me even now, you know. But he did Cyber Eye. So Larry has Cyber Eye for you. That's the answer. Is that long enough, that answer? Anyway, I want you guys to know, because I like the ballet, and I like the ballet better than the opera, because I sleep better at the ballet. And I like cooking. That automatically made me gay in Green Bay. All right? Imagine me looking gay to this guy, Satterhoff. Okay? So, next question.
When I grew up, I played games on location. What do you think could be the future for people playing... What do you think could be the future for people playing circus and zingy bingy, you know, one game at a time on a location?
Okay, let me, first of all, I have a lot of friends. My ex-wife said, is there any bar in Chicago or club or casino where they don't know you in this country? All my buddies in the entertainment business, I call it, the street entertainment, coin-operated entertainment, are asking me, Python, we are desperate. Besides the pool table, nobody plays darts. Nobody, the IT golf game is gone. It's all news. Not only that, we will sell over 100,000 units. But to me, the most important thing is, it's, you know, almost luck comes to those that know what the hell they are doing. That's why I catch fish, because I don't go fishing. I go catch fish. I know what I'm doing. Same thing with designing a street game. It has to work without service, I said before, these days, on service for at least a year. It has to be, to have what I call the mojo, the zingy bingy, that you don't find home. If you remember when you played your locations with games, the most exciting thing in a neighborhood, more exciting than your black and white TV at home in the 50s, or the Coca-Cola moving sign, or the Budweiser horses in the bar, was a Dave Christensen Mata Hari with the big boobies and the colorful color band. What a trip. What a show. What an escape. Get away from your naggy, dumpy wife and go play with Mata Hari. You felt like a Nazi German officer. You'd give her all the all Hitler's secrets to get laid, right? So anyway, fast forward, right? The other thing about these games, they are never seen before type games. When you go and play circus, believe me, I had people fly from all over the world to go to Vegas to play the game. And they called me and they said, you must do it. And we will do it, but we will do it the right way. I am not going to take $2,000 to $11,000 from people, and I could. And I can sell at least 1,000 games. Before I know, I got the team to develop it and the team to manufacture it. And I know I got a game, and I got an entertainment package that the operator is going to love. In 2 months, he's going to pay double to get another one. And the other thing is this. I'll tell you guys a secret. Eugene Jarvis knows it in this industry, and maybe he's the only guy besides myself. If you have a driving game and you have to change the steering wheel on it for $1,000 plus $500 for the tech to do it, $1,500. But the game makes $5,000 each week. You're not going to mind it. That's another twist, too. So the other thing about these games, especially Zingy Bingy, any normal man that has a normal hormonal count, testosterone, would want Zingy Bingy in his man cave or basement. Every wife would want him to stay home with Zingy Bingy because she's Zingy and he's Bingy and they're gonna Zingy Bingy, trust me. So that will answer your question, I think. Next. Go for it. Hang on for the microphone.
Just generally curious if you have any thoughts on what needs to happen to the payment model for pinball machines. Do you think the coin box is durable for the future?
I tell you what, people would pay in anything to play. And we've seen it in amusement parks. I was thinking of giving on wooden tokens, or really, and even dispense them as an award. The wooden tokens, they used wooden nickels for drinks. I think that it's very important that on the games today, you can swipe a card besides using cash. But cash is king. And believe me, if people want to play my game, they'll come to the train station and mug me and get my train money to play it. Because that game is going to be better than a heroin hit. And I'm going to make sure of that because I want the kids to spend their money on my pinballs, not with the drug dealers. We got to give them better choices. It's our fault. Kids with money that are left alone are going to get in trouble. We got to give them the pinball games and we got to give them just enough money to play pinball. Not to buy half the coke in Colombia. Next question. Next question once. Next question. All right, let's do the sit down pinball. Let me show you guys another project I'm working on. And I would like you guys to, if you have any ideas or suggestions, to go to pythonangelo.com and get in touch with me and my team. May I have the mobile mic so I can leave this? I leave the emporium here. Thank you, Phoebe. Because I, on short notice, I didn't have time to draw a storyboard in my hotel room. And also, it's going to be much more clear and relevant putting a man in a chair. So what a game will be is we'll have a pinball cabinet, and we'll have the size of a video cabinet with a vertical play field that swings. Player will come, sit down, and in a moment he sits down, there will be a rest here, a chair a la Eugene Jarvis video game with speakers and all that, and woofers and vibrators. And guys, my assistants, Vanna White and David Fix, could you guys lower slowly the playfield? Don't hit him in the head. Aww. In front of his chin, right here. So that he would be in a bubble in the playfield, inside the playfield. This will come around him. So basically, he won't have like Roger Sharp to bend down, right? To look over the flippers. They'll be right in front of his nose. And you can lift it now. Underneath, leave your hands there. Underneath, there will be joysticks with flipper buttons. In the dome here, there will be the stereo headsets, so you'll have surround sound. He'll feel the vibration on his shoulders. There will be pads here. And the seat underneath will adjust depending on his height, so he doesn't hit the bubble or, you know, it adjusts to his height, spinal height. We did that with two video games already. In front of him, there would be a mirror to look at himself getting beat up. And there would be balls going around the head on a big U-ramp. You will see this game, the sit-down pinball, in Pinball Magazine. That Jonathan is doing in Amsterdam, right? You guys familiar with the magazine? And it will have all the details, drawings, and the storyboards. He will not be in it, and they won't be holding the playfield. It'll be different. Thank you, guys. Thanks a lot. That's why I need very strong assistance. Thanks. By the way, nice score. So you can see how far we can push things. This concept with a sit-down pinball I got from a guy with a real bad back that I met on University of Illinois Circle campus, an old friend of mine, Larry Zimmerman. He's got a bad back. And he wanted to play one of my machines. And another thing that can be done is a kid in a wheelchair can pull up, and this chair will swing out. That's how it all started with me in my head. And a playfield would lower on him, and he'd be immersed inside a pinball game and play pinball, which now they can't. They have to. It's not there. You know, it's not comfortable. And so, any questions at this point?
You talked about the joysticks, and those could move in multiple directions. And do you have any ideas that they might move in multiple directions?
Of course. Everything is open. I didn't think about it, but that's when I need fresh minds like yours. And sometimes a question has more answers for the future and better answers. The one thing that we also have to get rid of is the two boring flippers just sitting there. Let's think four flippers, let's think moving flippers. For now, we have two upside-down hyperball, you know, but the other way with a trigger up under, mounted to the top. And again, the important thing, I don't know if you guys saw Q, the Harry Williams game that has all the jet bumpers in the middle of the playfield, a whole row of them, maybe eight of or six of them. It has the flippers the other way, like this. And has the right flipper on the left that shoots this way, and there are bumpers here on the sides too. So he's got like 10 jet bumpers in queue, and the flipper configuration is different. You guys saw the moving flippers, right? They close in and out. I had foreseen it being a flipper that grows, that gets bigger. And we're not using Viagra. We're using a new technology that, anyway, let's not go there tonight. It's too early. Can't do it after 11 tonight. Anyway, and that's where any one of you that has the craziest dream or idea, please contact pythonangelo.com or pythonangelo@yahoo.com. And either myself or one of my teammates is going to contact you back. I want you guys to know one thing about me and my team. Your ideas are not safe with me. And it's not because I'll copy them, it's because I'll build them. However, I, from the bottom of my soul, I share the Alexander the Great principle. And it's not because I'm an idealist, but because I'm a pragmatic, selfish man. Alexander the Great couldn't lose a battle because he shared the spoils with his generals and with the prisoners. He said, join me and you'll take part in the loot sharing or I'll kill you. So the same thing I have with all the people who work with me. If you send an idea, we will develop it and you will get a piece of the action. We don't want anything for free. We got enough of our own ideas. And so feel free, I don't care how crazy your idea is, what do you want to do? What if you want to move flippers around with the joysticks? What do you want to put an air blower or one of my favorite, I don't know if you guys ever heard that speech about what I wanted to put on a pinball game for people who they were putting this little pointy nipple on the shooters. Yeah. So you couldn't destroy the game. And I told Williams, Mike Stroh came to me, he said, well, you're the crazy one. This is what Bally is doing. What do you think we should do? And I said, it's very simple. We put underneath the game a mechanical leg with a big lead foot in a construction boot, comes and kicks the guy in the nuts when he does that. Or, he says, we're gonna get lawsuits, we're not gonna make money. I go, okay, I got money maker. We take a claw and we grab him by the nuts. And unless he puts 10 bucks in quarters, they don't let go. He says, now that I like. Anyway, so you got a boot, send it to us. We'll put it on the game. You got a claw, even better. Then we're talking money. So any questions, anything else? Wow, I got off easy today. Thank you all for coming. And
before Python, Don't forget to tell everybody you've got your artwork, and he's in the vendor hall with his artwork.
That's your job.
In the vendor hall, if y'all want to stop by and look
at it. Thanks, Phoebe. Thank you. I have to be up here and pretend I'm modest, and you tell them I have all the great artwork for sale over here. Okay? Thank you, guys. Thanks for coming.